Hello, my name is Kennedy Sam, and welcome to this week's edition of Conversations with Creative Waco. We are a fourth Friday feature on KWBU, and on months like this one, a fifth Friday too. Keep listening for conversations with creatives and community leaders making an impact in our artistic and cultural sector. Today we are talking about ways to engage with the community and its importance. Although last year prevented us from physically connecting with our community, we were able to connect through different avenues through the most trying times. ACT Locally Waco has been a key player to help connect and engage with various local organizations. On this episode, we are joined by Ashley Bean Thornton, the founder of ACT Locally Waco, and Farrell Foster, who serves as the acting executive director. Welcome to the show, and we are so glad to have y'all today.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you, Kennedy.
So let's just hop into it. Can you guys give me a little background on you guys, how either you got to Waco and basically got to this table today?
Okay, I'll start. Since I've been in Waco a little bit longer.
Yes, definitely.
I, like a lot of people, came to Waco because of Baylor. Was a Baylor student a thousand years ago, way before you were born. And I met my husband here. We got married. We moved to Austin for about 5 minutes and then lived in Houston for several years. And we loved Houston. And then one day we both woke up and were like, we're tired of Houston. Mm-hmm. And so we still have friends in Waco. This was about October and about November, we came to Waco for homecoming, brought our resumes, and by December, we were moved.
Nice.
And we've been in Waco ever since. That was about, I've been saying it's 20 years, but I think I've been saying that for about 4 years now. So that's makes it 24 years yeah. back in Waco.
Sparrow?
I came to Waco just last year.
Oh,
and
wow.
So I was living in Georgetown at the time, working in Austin. And I was contacted by Susie Painter March, the executive director of Prosper Waco, in December 2019. By February 3rd last year, I was working for Prosper Waco, and my family and we moved here on April the 2nd. So in the midst of the COVID pandemic, and so we've had an interesting experience being in Waco. Love Waco.
Yeah, it's been, I guess, almost exactly, a little over exactly a year that you've been here.
Exactly.
Yes. So have you been in Texas like your whole life or?
I'm a native Texan, mm-hmm. grew up in Dallas, but I spent 3 years in New Orleans and 13 years in Illinois during part of my professional career.
Yeah.
And came back and worked while in Dallas, then Austin, and now here.
Awesome. Well, we're so glad to have you.
Thank you, Kennedy.
So Ashley, can you tell us a little bit about what inspired you to launch ACT Locally Waco?
Sure. I did not grow up being super involved in the community. My family moved around a lot when I was little, and it wasn't really till I moved to Waco that I had a town that I lived in long enough to kind of get involved in it. I mean, I guess that's kind of an excuse. I guess I could have been involved in all those towns, but Waco was really the first one. And I had kind of a life-changing experience having to do with a mission trip. With our church youth group, we went to New Orleans to do some Katrina cleanup,
mm-hmm.
and it just really opened my eyes to a lot of the challenges that that community faced. And then one of our youth, in one of those discussions that you have when you're at youth camp, said, well, I don't know why everybody's talking about things here in New Orleans when things are just like this in Waco. And that really just opened my eyes. And when I got back to town, I started learning more and more about, you know, the different social services available and some of the different challenges and some of the kind of systemic issues in town. And this was, you know, Katrina was in 2005.
Right.
So this was 2006 or so. And Waco was a very different place back then. And so the more I learned about Waco, the tireder I got of hearing people say, oh, there's nothing to do in Waco. There's nothing going on in Waco. Because even back then, there was quite a bit going on, both in kind of the service world, but also in the arts and culture world and things like that. And so I think the initial inspiration was for ACT Locally Waco was to quit hearing people say that. But I had a full-time job. I was working at Baylor full-time, so I didn't feel like I could very effectively get involved in volunteering in a what you normally think of mm-hmm. as volunteering. But that also happened to be the same time that it got a whole lot easier to create web pages. And so I thought, well, this is something I can do in my spare time. I can just kind of gather up a list of the things that are going on around town and share those. And it kind of grew from there.
Yeah, I mean, that's around the time when Facebook wasn't even really around like that or anything right. So that's real.
Yeah.
That's right on the cusp.
I mean, the first act locally Waco was kind of a round robin email among, really among people who worked at food pantries at churches. That's how it started, was that. And there had been a couple of other things. I don't want to act like I invented the whole idea. I mean, there had been a couple of other things in Waco that people had done. Waco Foundation had a person who worked at the library and helped with grants, and she once a month or so would send out an email with opportunities and things going on with the different nonprofits. But she left that job, and when she left that job, she kind of gave all that to me, and so just kind of started growing from there.
Yeah. And so, Farrell, since you've been here a year, that means you hit the ground running to get involved with ACT locally. So how did you get connected and meet Ashley and join the organization?
It has happened so quickly. Yeah, you got a hook into me. Before I even got moved here, I started hearing about ACT Locally Waco. That's how you stay in touch with what's going on. And because I do communications with Prosper Waco, I needed to know about that. So I start following ACT Locally Waco. And eventually, of course, then, you know, COVID comes along. And so I just reach out to Ashley one day and say, listen, I need to meet you.
Mm-hmm.
And so we had this Zoom conversation. We ended up talking at least an hour,
a long time.
And Kennedy, it was like meeting an old friend who I had never met before. And we just kind of connected. And that was April last year. That was a year ago.
Right, it was a year ago.
And we would stay in touch. And then sometime in May, she said, Farrell, I need to take a break during the summer because she has a role at Transformation Waco. And so Susie Prosper Waco approved me doing that. So here, she started with a full-time job, and she was doing it on the side. I stepped in and helped her through the summer, and then she came back. But then she surprised me.
It's like it was a plot.
Yeah. She has not told me before that was a plan all along. But, you know, somebody was planning it, it's like. But in she put me on the ACT Locally Waco board, and she told the whole board in December that she felt like it was time for her to step away on a more permanent way, or permanent way. I don't know which one way you want to put it. And so we're in a board meeting and talking about the future and whatever, and I surprise myself and say, well, I'll help keep things going for a while.
So that's how
this happened, Kennedy. Just kind of these moments that string together. And the reason I offered to help was because I appreciate what ACT Locally Waco is doing and think that it needs to be a part of our ongoing communications efforts in this community. And so ACT Locally Waco has been Ashley Thornton. And so now what we're having to move to is okay, can ACT Locally Waco exist past Ashley? She is our founder, our spiritual mother, if you would say. she's our shaman.
Yeah.
But yet now we move into this new, and what's that going to look like? So I love and admire. We finally met in person this January.
Right.
Wow.
At a Starbucks.
Virtually.
Yeah.
Wow.
So,
that's like 9 months of building relationships.
Right. It was amazing.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
that's cool.
That's how I got to this point.
Yeah. Well, I'm so glad you mentioned that because, like, thinking back to what you said in the beginning of how it started as a round robin email, and now you have a whole board and organization and you're a whole nonprofit. So, what was that process like moving, you know, from doing this by yourself to having a whole team behind you?
Well, I think the big turning point for me was I started it in 2008, and just for several years it was email, and then I built the website, and that was all pretty easy to keep up with. And then at some point I decided I wanted to add a blog, and that took up a lot more time.
Mm-hmm.
So I realized, I need some help. So I had some interns from Baylor who helped for a while, and that was terrific. But, you know, they're not here all year long, and so I recruited some terrific volunteers. Jillian O'Reiner has helped with the Facebook. Facebook came along at some point, and that really became a bigger part of it, even than the newsletter somewhat.
Yeah.
And so just as those different elements of it accumulated, I realized I needed help doing those different things. And for a long time, it was volunteer help. And then finally one year, you know, I bit the bullet and raised a little bit of money and hired somebody part-time, and All this was actually before we became an official nonprofit. Mm-hmm. We actually only became an official nonprofit at the beginning of 2020, maybe. Yeah. I mean, it hasn't been very long that we've been an official nonprofit. Yeah. We were kind of a, I don't know how to describe it. Prosper Waco was our fiscal agent. Mm-hmm. So they don't like it when I call them my money launderer.
fiscal agent, much better.
Right. Yeah, so can we talk a little bit about how the work that you guys do in sharing how to engage is reflected into the community? So I know you guys repost things and kind of organize a little bit, but not too much. So how does Act Locally Waco come into the community?
Well, I'll talk about that a little bit, and then I want Farrell to talk about that too. But when I first started trying to kind of figure out the mission of it, I think some organizations start with a mission and then act on that. But I definitely started with acting and then came up with the mission. And the mission to me became to help people enjoy Waco by getting involved. And what I realized was most of the people who were doing things in town were super busy. And so a lot of them really just didn't have time to communicate all the wonderful things that they were doing, you know, because there's just a lot of little ant work in communicating stuff, you know, gathering up, making sure the commas are right, getting it online, that kind of stuff. And so pretty quickly, I saw that as my main role, was to collect that information and put it in a format where the people could access it easily. You know, you can go to one website, you can scroll through one calendar, you can see the different ways of getting involved. You know, you can read a little bit on a blog post and keep up to date. So that's what I really kind of felt like my role was. I never felt like my role was to do anything, but just to share what other people are doing and make it convenient for people to find it. And the little motto of Act Locally Waco is enjoy Waco, get involved, because I really feel like, especially at that time, Waco was, like I say, a little different from the way it is now. Right. At that time, the way to enjoy Waco was to get involved. And I still believe that's true, even though there are a lot more opportunities to just kind of consume what's going on in town. But I really feel like to enjoy Waco, you need to get involved. And so that was what I hoped it would do for people, to make it easy for them to get involved.
Well, I mean, that's a good segue into what I want to talk to you, Farrell, about. So you mentioned earlier how for so long, Act Locally Waco has been tied to Ashley. Now that you've taken, like, she's passed the torch to you, what does that look like for the organization now, and how are you kind of going to separate it and make sure that, you know, things keep going?
Well, whenever I've become the leader of anything in the past, I've always maintained status quo. In other words, one of the first jobs is to learn what's been being done and why, and understanding it. And then gradually, and even if Ashley had stayed a part of Act Locally Waco, she would have made changes, as she always was, making little changes. And so we will see it gradually over time. Mm-hmm. It'll morph some to fit the circumstances. But it wasn't our desire. To me, Ashley really nailed it with what she's done with Act Locally Waco. How does one person, basically, it's like having a garage band, you know, build this thing that has over 10,000 Facebook followers, 3,000 newsletter subscribers, and a website?
Yeah.
Well, they're doing something right. And I love what she, you know, we still that enjoy Waco and get involved by getting involved. And I think that is huge. In fact, I can do a connect with Creative Waco to illustrate that. Through Act Locally Waco, I first learned about Creative Waco.
Yeah.
I read something on there, and I think shortly Creative Waco did was raising funds for artists and such.
Yeah.
And so because of what I'd seen on Act Locally Waco, even though I cannot not be a big giver, I could do my part and help. And just became the more I've learned about Creative Waco, the more I've loved it. And I think that's just one illustration. And so we want to continue that, not just for me, obviously, but for all the people. Help them enjoy Waco by getting involved.
Yeah. So moving forward, how would you guys like people to get involved?
What I want people to do is, you know, people are at different seasons in their lives. You know, when you have a bunch of little kids and you're doing this, that, and the other, well, your way to get involved is to get your kids involved and take your kids around to do things. When you get a little older, there's different things. What I want people to do is to find the way to get involved that fits their life at the time. I don't want to ever hear anybody say there's nothing to do. Mm-hmm. I want them to be able to find their way to get involved, not to overwhelm them with busyness, but their way to get involved that fits where they are in their life.
Thank you guys so much for joining us today.
My pleasure.
Thanks for having us.
Yes.
Stay in the loop on ways to engage and connect with the community on their website, actlocallywaco.org, or connect with them on Facebook and Instagram at actlocallywaco. This conversation will be posted on kwbu.org, and you can also visit creativewaco.org/blog for content related to this episode. This is Conversations with Creative Waco on KWBU.
As works of art pass through the ages, they sometimes come together in a museum's collections for the delight of the public. Here's David Smith with this week's edition of David and Art.
As I mentioned last week, sometime sooner or later, I'll be in a new office. The new offices for the history department don't have nearly as many bookshelves as our old ones. So every history teacher is going to have to pare down radically his or her book collection. Some members of the department will no doubt simply take their books home to shelves there. Others who have a second office will probably make use of that. For still others, however, myself included, it looks like there's going to be a sad parting of ways with a significant portion of our books. The situation reminds me of the way in which paintings and other artworks pass through time. Sometimes a particular group of them will be together in a museum's collection on public display. Other times, they may be in a museum, but not on public display. Still other times, in little groups, in private hands, gracing only a living room or a dining room, seen only by a small number of eyes. As a rule, museums don't like to part with their works of art, and if they do, it has to be for a serious reason. In fact, museums selling pieces from their collections, a practice known as deaccessioning, is strictly regulated by the American Association of Museum Directors. If a museum does so for any reason other than to buy more art, it can face stiff sanctions. But this is the age of COVID. A year ago this month, knowing that the pandemic would no doubt wreak havoc on museum budgets, the AAMD announced a moratorium on penalties if a museum sells a work of art and uses the proceeds to help with its operating costs. The association made it clear that this was a temporary arrangement, not intended, as it put it, to incentivize deaccessioning or the sale of art. The moratorium will remain in effect until April 10, 2022. Critic Robin Pogrebin said that the change was a measure of just how financially damaging the coronavirus pandemic has been for cultural institutions. Last fall, the Brooklyn Museum was the first to take action under these relaxed rules, and it raised $31 million by selling off works. It planned to set up a special fund with the money that will help pay the salaries of conservators and curators, along with cleaning and maintaining artworks. The whole story has made me think about art in the long run. Similar to my books, the collection of an art museum is only together for a while. Pieces of art pass through history from owner to owner, from collection to collection. Sometimes a handful of pieces come together for a short time. As I prepare to set some of my books free because I no longer have a place for them, I can only hope that some of them, like pieces of art that have passed through the centuries, will find a new home with someone that will take care of them, benefit from them, and look at life differently because of them.
You can find this and past David and Art segments on our website at kwbu.org. Look for David and Art in the Programs tab.
You're listening to Conversations with Creative Waco on KWBU, and I'm your host, Kennedy Sam. We are back and continuing our chat with Ashley Bean Thornton. Thank you again for staying on to continue the conversation. I wanted to kind of get some history into the iconic, well-known, Waco famous red Chucks that are on your feet right now.
Well, the history is pretty boring. Uh-huh. It has to do with, my husband and I were traveling. I don't even remember where we were. And we got to this store that had Chucks on sale, mm-hmm. like for $8 a pair.
What?
I mean, and so I bought a pair And then I didn't wear them for a while because they kind of hurt my feet. But then I learned about inserts.
Yeah.
You haven't learned about them yet because you're not old enough yet. But you can get these little inserts that you put in your shoes. And voila, all of a sudden they were the most comfortable shoes I'd ever had.
Changed your whole life.
Yes, they did. And I am the kind of person that, you know, I have very set habits. Mm-hmm. Like I have the same breakfast every day. I buy five pairs of the same pants and wear them every day. And so when I found the pair of shoes that did the trick, I was like, okay, I never have to decide again what shoes I'm going to wear. I'm just going to wear these every day.
$8. So I remember the last time I bought mine, and it was like $6.
Oh, yeah. They're more expensive than that now. And I wear, like, I go through about three or four pairs a year.
Yeah.
So it's not nearly as good of a deal financially as it was. But it is definitely a good deal as far as mental space because I don't have to decide.
Right.
I spend no time deciding. And I finally worked my way into a job where I don't actually have to decide what I'm going to wear every day. I wear the same thing.
Now,
every
that is
day.
Super convenient.
Yes.
Yeah, so now that you've taken a step back from your role with ACT locally, I know that you're still pretty involved in the community. You do a couple things, for sure. Mm-hmm. One of those being the after-school program at J.H. Hines.
Yeah. And Transformation Waco in general, but mainly Hines.
Yeah,
yes.
So can you tell me about what drew you to that campus and how that relationship kind of started?
Well, I had been volunteering at Hines. Through my job at Baylor, we had already made a relationship with Hines. I had been volunteering there some, and we had had several projects with Baylor students. We had this program called Bear to Bear because their little mascot is bears, and, you know, where we sent a ton of tutors and, you know, helped with different projects there. So I already kind of had that relationship. So when I retired, when I was still thinking about retiring, I just happened to run into Robin McDurham at a meeting, and I mentioned that I was thinking about retiring, and she was like, well, I need somebody who's going to help advocate for the after-school program.
Yeah.
So I thought that sounded super exciting. Plus, I double-checked that I could wear my red Chucks every day, and she was fine with that. And so that's how I got linked in, and it's been super fun.
Yeah.
I mean, this year was kind of a weird year, but we've gotten to do some really exciting things. It's very different from my job at Baylor, so it's a perfect retirement, you know, switch courses, and we've just had a ton of fun.
Yeah, I've been seeing some of the things that you share, and you guys have, like, a nice amount of partnerships with different community organizations like Baylor.
Lucky with that. I mean, we have Baylor Women in Engineering Group, Society of Women Engineers, comes and does terrific projects with us basically every Thursday. We had a day where we made helicopters out of popsicle sticks, and we made little shooter deals to teach about force and propulsion and just all these super fun projects. And we have a wonderful relationship with the Texas AgriLife group. They come once a week and make a connection between nutrition and physical activity. Like, I mean, we've done all kinds of trips. We planted little peas. Mm-hmm. We've made all these fun little salads. We've done a whole lot of great things with them. They're also the ones that run 4-H. 4-H has come out and done several things with us. There's other Baylor groups. Baylor Outdoor Activities comes about once a week and leads an activity. They've learned how to put up tents. Yeah. They learned about fires. They learned about first aid.
Yeah, and these are all elementary age students.
Second through fifth.
Yeah. How has seeing that kind of representation, like, impacted them as young minds?
Well, it's changed their lives.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It might
have. You know,
they're
kids. They're little kids. And, you know, just, I mean, I don't know how much time you've spent with groups of little kids. But, you know, some of them are really into it. And some of them are not. And some of them are, you know, I mean, they're just little kids. So, I mean, I don't really know how much it has affected each individual one. But I can remember from when I was a kid, the things that I did that have affected me. So I can only hope that having these little opportunities are, you know, getting the wheels turning.
So you bring a nice connection between, like, storytelling and the arts. I see that you brought your nursery rhyme book
us. I brought it.
I'm glad, because I definitely want to talk about it. So is that your first book that you've published or written?
No, actually, my very first one was with the kids at Hines. I wrote some stories. I wrote two stories. I think it was two stories. And the kids in the Hines art club illustrated the stories, and we published them as a book, and we sold them, and we put the money back in the Heinz. In fact, that's the money we're using now for the after-school program. And so that was really the first publishing experiment that I did. That was super fun.
So can you tell us a little bit about Miss Bean's newfangled nursery rhymes and how that idea came to life?
I don't know what kind of inspired me to do this. I've always loved nursery rhymes. My grandmother was a second grade teacher, and she started teaching me nursery rhymes when I was a little kid. And it just occurred to me that where are the new nursery rhymes? Mm-hmm. I mean, there probably are some, but I'm just not familiar with them. And I thought, you know, it'd be kind of fun to write some nursery rhymes for modern times.
Yeah.
So that's kind of what inspired that idea. And so I challenged myself to write a nursery rhyme a day for 30 days. And so that's where it came from.
Yeah.
And then put it all together into a little book. And Sal Velasco, you probably know him because he's a fantastic artist in town, did all the illustrations, volunteer, and then we put it together and sold it. And it was a nice little fundraiser for Act Locally Waco.
Nice, yeah. Do you have a background in education, or are you just like a natural writer?
I taught high school for a year or two. I was one of those high school teachers who started and washed out after 2 years. But I have a little bit of background in it. And my mom was a teacher, my sister and my grandmom, you know, generations back.
Yeah. And so now you have partnered with Trent and Wild Imaginings to bring a podcast with Rogue Media. And I read that you wrote some, like whatever they're performing,
well,
the stories,
I wrote. So my last little writing project was, you know, I did nursery rhymes. So now it's time to do tall tales, right?
Right.
So all the old fashioned kinds of kid literature. So I guess it was over the summer. Again, summer's generally when I have a little bit of time to think about things like this. I started writing these stories that I called the Fantastical History of Waco. And they're, to me, when you read them, they're like, oh, okay, this is ridiculous.
Yeah.
But I was surprised at how many people were like, did that really happen?
Yeah.
I was like, well, it's fantastical. It's not completely untrue. But I had written these stories, and it turned out during the pandemic, Trent started a little writer's group, and I was a part of that. And I would have quit writing them, but he really encouraged me to keep writing them. So I wrote about 10 or 15 of them. And put them on a little Facebook page. And his thing is drama and theater. And so he came up with the idea of taking those little stories and turning them into scripts, like old-timey radio theater scripts. And so he did all that work. I mean, my stories are just the initial little bit, but he really turned it into a script and made it into a podcast. And so he and Michael at Rogue Media are really the ones. I mean, I really haven't had anything to do with it except to say, here, take my story, enjoy, and listening to
them.
But super fun.
We'll definitely have to get you and Trent back here because I want to hear more about this and this journey.
He's very talented and has a lot of organizational ability and talent, and he's a real asset.
Well, I am so glad that you were able to stop by and talk to us today, and I am just so grateful to have you in our community and really value all of the work that you do.
Likewise, we have so many neat things going on, and a lot of it is thanks to Creative Waco, so I really appreciate y'all's work.
Thank you. Thank you so much. As mentioned, you can connect with Act Locally Waco at actlocallywaco.org or on Facebook and Instagram at Act Locally Waco. Catch the podcast, Fantastical History of Waco, written by Ashley and brought to life by Wild Imaginings and Rogue Media on all streaming platforms. This conversation will be posted on kwbu.org. You can also visit creativewaco.org/blog for content related to this episode. Tune into our next episode Friday, April 30th for more deep dives into local arts and culture. This has been Conversations with Creative Waco on KWBU, and I'm your host, Kennedy Sam. Thanks for tuning in.